You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound. The sound of the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. I'm Mike Blewett, your host for the next 2 hours, along with my main man, George Kurtz. Excited to have you listening in on Fantasy Sports Radio. We're going to take you around the horn in MLB. We're certainly going to talk some football today as training camps are open. Rookies have reported to a whole bunch of teams at this point, and we're going to see more and more news coming out. There are a few things to update, suspensions, potential suspensions, and the like. But, George, I'd want to start today by talking about yet another dominant performance by Chris Sale. He went six innings last night, but he reached the 200 strikeout plateau. He joins Nolan Ryan, Pedro Martinez, and Randy Johnson as the only pitchers to do that in 20 starts or less. Last night was his 20th start of the season.
It's July 22nd, and he's got 200 strikeouts. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's amazing. He's just mowing people down. Red Sox obviously very happy with that deal. White Sox, Moncada's finally starting to play now, so I guess they're going to find out what their sign looks like. Kopech is not going to pitch until maybe September for the White Sox. But I think it's a deal, Mike, it's going to work out for everyone. Everyone's going to be happy.
Well, that would be good, obviously. I thought Sale, I mean, you and I have talked about it a bunch. I thought to some extent the acquisition of Sale was kind of undersold to some extent. He's on such a great contract. This is a prime example of a guy, while he was great in Chicago, it was a prime example of a guy that probably needed to get out of the city that he was in simply because he'd had some strife with the front office. He wasn't quite as dominant last year as this year, and I think this change of scenery has really helped him.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it last year, right? He was all upset with them. Something was about the uniform they wanted to wear, the throwback uniform, something like that. He cut them all up. That was a strange situation. Something, you just don't hear stuff like that. So maybe he needed to go up.
But hey, who was the player that was in the middle of all the battle? His son in the clubhouse?
Remember? I think Adam LaRoche. LaRoche.
So Sale was very outspoken about that. Yeah.
That just sounds like an outlier. It just sounds like him and Kenny Williams just didn't like each other, right? It happens, and they were looking for a reason to fight, and they found it, you know. And I guess in the end, Sale was going to help them more by dealing them and getting younger players. And the White Sox, with all these deals they've made over the past year or so, their farm system is one of the top in the majors. They're in 2019, 2020, they're going to be a team to be reckoned with.
Yeah, the Quintana trade pushed him over the top there. George, he had 9 strikeouts last night through 6. He does pick up the win, but it brought down his average Ks per start.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Shows you how good he's been. Remember, he keeps doing this in Fenway Park, too. I mean, that's just amazing. Amazing what he's doing.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit more about this. Jackie Bradley Jr. had another great catch last night. Guy's just a defensive wizard. So Sox picked up the win 6-2. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Take it around the horn, MLB. Surprise, surprise, Aaron Judge hit another ball a mile. Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Back after this. Back on the Roto Experts in the Morning. It's Mike and George. Hit us up today on Twitter. We're going to take baseball questions. We'll take football questions. If you want to yell at me about anything, just let's keep it clean. At Fantasy Sports Radio on Twitter. It's at
FNTSY Radio. Setting yourself up. If you want to yell at me, call in.
Yeah. I don't know why I said that. It's a rough start to that segment. At FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. And if you feel like giving us a call, feel free. 844-843-6879.
Don't yell at me. I don't want to hear it.
FNTSY. Just yell at me. Yeah, don't yell at George. I would never encourage people to take out their frustrations on George. But getting back to the Sox for a minute. So Sale has his 200 strikeout. Like I said, only Nolan Ryan. Excuse me, Pedro. And Randy Johnson, wow,
This is a really rough start to the segment. So only Ryan Page or Randy Johnson have done that in 20 starts or less. George, would you guess that any of those players have done it multiple times?
I might guess that Ryan has done it multiple times, right? Maybe Randy Johnson, but from the way you're sounding it, I'm going to say no.
One of them did.
Ryan.
No.
Aw.
It's damn. Randy. He did it three times. So it's Nolan Ryan, Pedro, Chris Sale, and then Randy Johnson three times. Pretty crazy. So back to that game for a moment. The Sox do win 6-2. They are now 12 games over 500. Star of the show was Chris Sale. As far as homers, Maldonado had one for the Angels. That's the only person that went yard. Mookie Betts, 2-for-3. He's up to 280. That was his 30th double, it looks like. So, yeah. So, beyond that, just a couple of hits. Jackie Bradley Jr., 2-for-4. He does have an RBI and a really nice catch again, George. He's proven himself. And that's two big-time web gems in the last week. He's proven himself to be quite the defensive player.
Yeah, he's had a rebound to his season offensively, too. He got out to a slow start, a very slow start at that. A lot of people did move on from him. Slow April, slow May, started to turn it around really in late May, June. And is hitting solid now. Probably still not quite the production you wanted from him, but he's doing some damage there. He has had a couple of
wins. But if you had gotten him on the waiver wire, you're reaping the benefits.
Yes, obviously, because you got him when he hit well. And I don't know if I really blame you for when they released him, because sometimes you do have to move on. 2 months or so was not – it's a small sample size in reality, but in fantasy, that's a long time to wait. By Memorial Day, we do have to make those decisions, and maybe you moved on and got a player who was hitting better then. Bradley, I think, is going to be somebody who will always be a solid offensive player, but not someone you want sort of steering the boat for your fantasy team here. So a good fan to see him turn it around. Of course, as a Yankee fan, I wasn't happy to see him rob Judge of a home run last week, but good for him.
Yeah. Ricky Nolasco got the start for the Angels, obviously having a rough season. Gave up 5 in the first. He only went 4 innings last night, 6 earned runs and 9 hits. So he is not having any kind of a season. Cam Bedrosian, I finally had to move on from him earlier this week, George. He pitched the 9th last night, scoreless, but obviously not a safe situation.
Well, if you just did it this week, you waited as long as you possibly could. You certainly gave him a shot.
Really did.
For whatever reason, and I don't know why, Socia just doesn't like him. Or doesn't trust him, or whatever it might be. He's not going to put him in that closer role. I'm not so sure I blame Socia for this. I mean, he's given Bedrosian multiple chances, and Bedrosian's been hurt multiple times. Every time he gets the role, he gets hurt. You know, and maybe Socia feels he needs someone reliable there, although Bud Norris got hurt as well. It's only one injury, not the 3 or 4.
And Houston Street got hurt as well?
Street, I really don't think is even in this conversation, or at least shouldn't be. If he is, then it is on Socia, because Street has really nothing left. And, you know, the Angels have they've really sort of faltered here of late. They've fallen, I don't want to say out of the wild card hunt. I don't know if anybody's really out of the wild card hunt. But it makes you wonder the way they've been playing of late. They start to go, you know what, maybe it's not a bad idea to trade Street, trade Norris. I think, Mike, right now, it's what, we got 9 days to a deadline. I think there are 6 to 8 closers currently closing who'll be traded by the deadline.
Well, that's good. We'll do that in the next segment. I want to put a list together, and we'll talk about those and potential landing spots. But I think you're right. I think there's a lot of teams that whose fortunes have changed. And I want to talk about one of them right now, actually. This is towards the positive. So the Pirates beat the Rockies last night 13-5. They picked up 5 games from Sunday, George. They are 2.5 games out.
Yes, I wrote about Gerrit Cole yesterday in my Hot Not column, because this changes things now. I mean, can they just trade Cole? Can they just trade McCutcheon? You know, I think what it does for the Pirates is this. I mean, they have to think differently, sort of like the Rays, you know, the Oakland A's when they're in it, because they can't let these guys go for nothing. It'll hurt them in the long run, where they'll be bad for 4 years now, because they had these great players who, you know, they went for it, and now they don't get any kind of return. So they need to weigh that. Going for it, get a return. Going for it, get a return. And winning all week. Cole looks like a Cy Young guy again. McCutcheon has looked great now for the past 2 months. He looks like an MVP candidate. So I think they're still going to try and move these two guys, Mike, but only now if they get the return they want. You know, they're not going to give these guys away for 70 cents on a dollar anymore. They'll need full price. I think it's the right way to go for them. Marte's back this week as well. He came back from his suspension. So his team is at full strength now. They're hitting. They're pitching well. I don't want to say they're dangerous because really it's more because it's a watered down. I mean, the Cubs have been up and down. Milwaukee, we know, has come down to earth a little bit. Cardinals are just a dumpster fire in that bullpen. So, yeah, it's intriguing. What I'm very curious to see what Pittsburgh's going to do here. And I'm a Gerrit Cole owner in a few leagues. I want greedily, I want him to stay because there's no better park to pitch in the majors than PNC.
Yeah, so to give folks a sense, they picked up five games from Sunday. They're 2.5 games out in the Central. Milwaukee lost 6 in a row. The Pirates have won 6 in a row, and it's changed around the season. I mean, on Sunday, the Pirates were 4 games below 500. So you're thinking, all right, it might be, if they don't get on a little run here, it might be time to sell off like George is saying. But they got on a little run here, so now they don't have to sell. And while, George, I agree with you not letting these guys walk for nothing, at the same time, they're in a very similar position to the Royals. Maybe you just take one last shot with the team, because how often are you in the mix? I know the Pirates have been frustrated by Madison Bumgarner in these one-game playoffs, but they could conceivably make a run here in a weak NL Central.
They could, but what you're saying is tough, because if you try and make this run and you're unsuccessful, how far now have you set your team back? And that's
that
the issue
the
here. You know, because if they lose Cole and McCutcheon, and they get, you know, because they went for it and they get nothing. I mean, they could always trade these guys later, but and they don't get as much or a high return. Now maybe you're bad for 5-6 years. Yeah, and that's not good. And also,
they were bad for 25.
Yeah, that's true also. You need to be realistic. You know, what's your best-case scenario? Your best-case scenario probably, okay, hey, you can win the division. I could see that. The Cubs haven't played all that well consistently either, but that's best case. I think your most realistic scenario is you win the wild card, which means you're doing all this, not making trades you should make to get the best value possible for a one-game playoff, and as you already mentioned, something that hasn't gone your way. You've kept losing to Bumgarner. You're not going to lose to Bumgarner this year, but you know maybe you're going to lose to Zach Greinke.
Yeah.
You know, does that make you feel any better? You know,
no.
That's as worse. A GM, that's something they have to figure out here. Is it worth it? You know, I mean, are we even if we beat Greinke, you know, if it is Greinke, even if we beat Arizona, are we going to beat the Dodgers? You know, are we going to take them out? I mean, sometimes you need to have that come to Jesus moment. Where, you know what? It's nice. I love the run we're on. But I got to do what's best for the team long term here, and that's to trade these guys. But my other thing that I would like to put up, Mike, in all these sports, and I don't know what the GM, or Neil Huntington, I don't know what his contract is, but if his contract is up, he doesn't care about 2 years, 3 years down the line. He cares about this season and making the playoffs would mean a lot for him. He doesn't care about these young players that he might get. He's not going to be around when they end up playing for Pittsburgh. So I can see that playing a part in it as well.
Yeah, he has been there for quite a while. Let's just give you a sense of this box score. Marte was back, is back. He's went 2-for-5 last night, 4 runs scored. Andrew McCutcheon, 3 base hits, 3 runs scored, 3 RBIs. George, on McCutcheon, quickly, the stat that I had last night, since June 4th, Andrew McCutcheon is hitting .380.
It's amazing. But back in April, he looked, it's just McCutcheon again. He's not going to have a good season. And he must still be bothering. He doesn't run as much. But really, since Marte got suspended and they put McCutcheon back in center field, he's taken off offensively. I have no idea why that is. I don't know why playing left field, center field would make any kind of difference to how you bat. It's probably just a coincidence, but it has worked out that way. Marte got suspended, McCutcheon back in center field, McCutcheon hits.
Yeah. Three base hits last night. Josh Bell went 4-for-6 with 4 RBIs. They pounded Rockies pitching last night. Hoffman goes 3 innings, 9 hits, 4 walks, 7 earned. The bullpen didn't do much better. Nolan Arenado on the Rocky side does hit a 2-run bomb. That's a solo shot, 2-for-4, but he had 2 RBIs and 2 runs scored. So Nolan Arenado continues being Nolan Arenado. So good news there. But overall, 18 hits for the Pirates and 13 runs scored. So we got that. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more baseball. Carlos Martinez has blue hair now. I don't know if it helped the Cardinals seem to energize them against the Cubs bullpen, but we'll talk about that. George, yay or nay on Carlos Martinez's blue hair? Tell me after the break. Folks, there's a poll on Twitter. Answer that too. We're back in a couple of seconds. Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's Mike and George. Hopefully you're listening on the app. Because if you're not, you're streaming on the web like a weirdo, as Nando DeFino would say. But please download the app. You can take the world's premier 24/7 Fantasy Sports Radio Network with you wherever you go. Download the Fantasy Sports Radio app in the iTunes Store on Google Play and listen for free anytime, anywhere. So you listen to us here on demand. The show after this today is College Football Today. And guess what? Huge surprise. You're going to get me for that show. Another 2 hours I'll be here. I'll be hosting with Rich Sermonello. Joe Lisi off this week, so I'm filling in for him. Obviously, big news on that front. Ole Miss, Hugh Freeze, all that kind of stuff. After that, it's the Weekend Fantasy Update. That's Joe Galina, Mike Florio, and Frank Stampfl. And then the Father and Son Fantasy NASCAR Hour after that. So, please feel free to listen in all day, live or on demand. So, George, moving over to the guy that's the center of the poll is Carlos Martinez. I just was watching highlights last night, all live look-ins on MLB Network, and I saw that Carlos Martinez has blue hair. I don't know why, but he does. St. Louis beat the Cubs 11-4 yesterday, and it was courtesy of the Cardinals getting after that bullpen of the Cubs. So another loss for the Cubs, and they've made these moves, and they're just treading water right now, George.
Yeah, the Cubs have had an okay week. Milwaukee's actually also came back down to the pack there. Martinez didn't pitch great yesterday. I mean, it didn't pitch terrible, but 10 hits. Really got out of a bunch of jams here to get that quality start for you. But other than that, I think we expected more from Carlos Martinez. I think we expect him to be almost an ace every time out. So he's not quite to that level of a Sale. Almost said Scherzer, although he didn't really get it done last night either.
He's not quite to that level yet.
But listen, I do like Martinez. What are you going to do here? But like I said, the Cubs, I'm okay with the Cubs. They're 7-3 in their last 10, so they have turned it around a little bit. They're only a game behind Milwaukee now. Do we realize that? They're a game behind Milwaukee. We'll get a 5.5 game lead before the All-Star break. They're 3-7. They've come back to the pack as well. And as you already said, Pirates 2 out. And the Cardinals are 3.5 out. That division's a quagmire right now.
Yeah, Jake Arrieta started for the Cubs yesterday. He got a pretty good start, 2 earned in 6 innings. Pedro Strop comes in, he throws scoreless, and then it fell apart. Edwards, Rondon, Grimm, they gave up 7-9 runs in the fateful 8th inning. So it went from a 4-3 lead or 3-3 tie, I guess. Is that right? No, they were losing 3-2, and then the Cardinals put up 9 runs in the 8th. So Tommy Pham got in the mix. Dexter Fowler, 3 hits. Matt Carpenter, 2-for-5 yesterday. Randall Grichuk, 2-for-4 yesterday, 2 RBIs. So everybody piled on, and Grichuk actually hit a homer off of Arrieta as well.
Yeah, Grichuk's back. I was on the DL. I got activated, I believe, on Thursday, so he's back in the lineup there. If you need some power, you may want to go out and get him. He's had an up and down season, to say the least, probably more down than up. Was sent down to the minors for a while as well to work on his swing. He does have power. You got to suffer in the average department there, but like I said, he's on a lot of waiver wires. He's playing full time again, so if you did need power, he's someone you can go out there and grab.
I saw Kyle Schwarber try to track down a fly ball yesterday.
Not great.
This is not breaking news. Guy can't play the outfield.
No, he's a DH. I mean, the Cubs could try all they want here. If I'm the Cubs, if the reports show the Yankees really wanted him in that deal with Chapman last year, they should have moved him. And it's not even close. I'd rather get Gleyber Torres over Schwarber. He's an American League DH playing in the outfield in the National League. Not good.
Yeah, I mean, there was a ball hit to the wall. He jumped into the ivy and missed it. It was just a disaster. I was like,
I don't even blame him.
I guess not, but how do you get to this point with not having any position?
Yeah, we see that all the time. Come on. How long have you not been watching baseball for? I mean, it's all the time with guys just can't play the field. David Ortiz couldn't really play the field. Edgar Martinez, two of the best hitters we've ever seen. They couldn't play the field. It does happen. Some guys, they bury Carlos Beltran's glove earlier this week. Some guys don't.
Yeah, that was good. I, you know what? I wanted to bring that up in a segment last weekend. Earlier this week, and I never got to it. They held a memorial service led by Brian McCann wearing this ridiculous robe, and they buried Carlos Beltran's glove, a memorial service, because he has not played the outfield in like over 2 months. He's just been straight DHing during that stretch. So,
but then he played the outfield
funny.
2 days later.
I know. So they had to probably dig it up. I wonder if they had some sort of resurrection for his glove. You know, the only thing that stood out to me about that is they're having a lot of fun. I think the Astros, I think they have that team chemistry thing going where they're loose and they can joke around with each other and that kind of stuff. Obviously, they suffered a huge blow with the Correa injury, but he is scheduled to be back before the playoffs. And, you know, I think they're the type of team that can overcome it as big a blow as it was.
You think?
Not to mention they have a billion-game lead.
They have a 17-game lead.
Yeah.
They could put their minor league team up there and they'd win this division. I mean, yeah, I could be all loose and great, too, if I have a 17-game lead. This team has nothing to play for. I mean, they literally have nothing to play for until October. I actually might be worried a little bit if I'm Houston, only because you have nothing to play for until October. You're going to get bored. It's human nature. You know, I think what they're doing, the glove thing, I think that, yes, you want to keep the team loose, keep the team interested somewhat. But, my God, they don't – I mean, it's over until October. I mean, you get the next 2 months, literally it's off, 2.5 months off until you play another important game. The only thing you don't want is injuries. So Correa, you know, should be back somewhere in September. So they'll get all they really want with him is get him 2 weeks, 2 weeks with the red bats to get him ready for the playoffs. They'll be fine. They're going to keep milking this as far as giving guys days off. Pitcher, what, your arm's a little sore? Go on with DL. You know, take 10 days off. So they'll keep playing this game here. But yeah, that division, I mean, 17-game lead. It's July 22nd. My God.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. And with some teams in there that we had that people had some level of expectations for as well. So I wanted to stay in the NL Central because the Brewers obviously dropped another one. As I mentioned earlier, they've lost six in a row. They lose 6-1 yesterday to the Phillies, a team that in their own right is 28 games below 500. However, the one thing I wanted to say is that Aaron Nola pitched really well yesterday. He moved to 7-6 on the season, 7 innings strong, 1 earned run, 9 Ks. So a really big outing for Nola. But I was watching MLB Network last night. I wasn't sure exactly who said it. But they said they would try to throw everything at the Phillies if they are a team that needs an arm. They would throw everything at the Phillies to try to get Aaron Nola. But at the same time, the Phillies are already in rebuild mode. Why would they ditch a guy that's probably part of the rebuilding process?
I agree. That's what we always hear. Oh, you know, we got to go after this guy from this team. Why does this guy want to? Why would they want to trade him? I mean, are you going to seriously overpay? I mean, seriously overpay? Because Nola is everything you should want to build around, right? A good young pitcher.
Yeah.
And the important word there is young. Right? This is not somebody, this is not a 28, 29-year-old where, okay, maybe you think about it. Certainly not somebody in his 30s where, yes, we're definitely going to move him. You're talking, he's 24. Why would they want to move him? 24 and he's had some success already in the majors. And that ballpark, too, it's the bandbox. There's no way, if I'm not, like I said, unless I'm seriously overpaid, there's no way I'd move Aaron Nola.
That's exactly what I thought. Aaron Nola is the type of guy that you get when you ditch one of your veterans to try to rebuild your team. You get the young arm to build around. You know, if they want to trade Neshek here at the deadline, that makes sense. They're 28 games out. What do you need a specialist reliever for? Get rid of him, try and get a piece, but I don't know how much he commands at this. But to your point, I felt the exact same way. I don't see why Aaron Nola would be a guy that they would move on from unless, I mean, somebody could always bowl you over, but it seems really unlikely that somebody would want to do that for him. So in any event, we'll see how it goes. But Aaron Nola, really nice outing. I mean, to expand a little bit further, George, Aaron Nola pitched really well last night. So 7-6 on the season. As you said, it's not a good team. It's not an easy ballpark to pitch in, but he's having a nice season.
Yeah, listen, I'd want him too if I'm an opposing team. I would certainly want to go out and get him. But it would cost you so much. I mean, if I was to make a trade, Mike, to go out and get someone like Aaron Nola and I give up everything, I have to be, I mean, absolutely 100% sure, positive that he's the last piece of the puzzle for me. That it's going to make me a World Series winner. Not a contender, a winner. Yeah, because anything less than that, I mean, you have a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah. So this month alone, Nola's four starts. He's gone 7, 8, 6, and 7 innings. He's given up a total of 5 earned runs. So he's really on fire this month in those 28 innings. So good for him. Moving on to the next team would be the Yankees. Aaron Judge, George, tape measure shot. Do you think that was his longest one of the season, or do you think the one at Yankee Stadium was further? He went to, folks, if you didn't see it, he went upper deck at Safeco Field about 4 rows from the top, and the guy made a pretty ridiculous catch for a fan in the stand so that it didn't hit the back row.
I mean, if you believe in the Statcast there, it's not even close to his longest home run. The one at Yankee Stadium, the one that almost to left center field was 495. They're saying last night was 440. If you believe that stuff, I don't. You know, I don't think most of that stuff is true. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out if you watched last weekend, the Gary Sanchez home run at Fenway Park, the one that pretty much went over the light stand, they had it 407. How is that 407? Right. I don't understand how they do these things sometimes. So, no, according to StatCast, the one at Yankee Stadium was much further, not even close. 50 feet further, 55 feet, actually. 440.
It did look further to me. I thought the Yankee Stadium home run was further if you're comparing the two. Just the layout of Yankee Stadium, that was a much deeper home run. I've sat in those bleacher seats in Yankee Stadium and earlier this year, and honestly, when I was sitting in those bleacher seats, I said, there's no possible way anybody could hit a home run out here. And Aaron Judge did it, no joke, like a week later. Talk a little bit more about him. Yankees got a nice win last night. And Chase Headley, George, I don't know if he's made any of your Who's Hot articles recently, but a surprising stat from him. Mike and George, we're going to talk a little bit about the Yankees and what happened to Max Scherzer last night. We're back after the break. We are the Roto Experts in the Morning. Mike and George. Rocking out. This is like a kind of a Blink 182 situation, I think. It's kind of what that sounds like. George, Blink 182. Like that band?
I don't dislike them, but I wouldn't put them anywhere near my top.
I didn't think, I thought you were going to be negative towards them. So you're a little softer than I anticipated. So
just a blah.
Well, that's good news.
Blah.
Just, all right. Well, that's good news for them. You know, if you get a blah out of George, sometimes that's a positive. Anyway, Judge hit the home run a mile last night. I did think the Yankee Stadium home run was further, but CC Sabathia, kind of crafty, threw 5 innings, threw a fair amount of pitches, but he ends up picking up the win. He's 9-3 on the season. Nothing particularly impressive, but you know, 5 strikeouts in 5 innings, and he limited the Mariners.
Well, the Yankee bullpen now is perfect for CC. Just go 5 innings. No, give us 5 innings, keep us in the game, and the bullpen will take over the rest. That's what the Yankees are hoping for CC. The Mariners had him early. And they were hitting rockets all over the field, but the defense came up big. Gregorius made a nice play. Clint Frazier made a nice play. Kept some runs off the board, and CeCe settled down. And then he made his pitches. That's the way it seems to be with CeCe. If he can get through the first couple of innings, he'll be fine. If he can't, then he's going to get wrecked. He's a crafty lefty at this point, soft thrower. If he makes his pitches, he'll be good. But if he's putting that ball over the heart of the plate, he's going to get wrecked. But the defense needs to show up, and last night it did.
Yeah, the pitcher for Seattle last night, Andrew Moore, I just felt like I was kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, and it finally did when Judge hit that bomb. Judge has 4 RBIs last night, including the homer. Moore goes 6 innings, 9 hits, 5 earned runs. Didi Gregorius had 3 hits last night as well. I think they're 3 singles as well. But good outing for him on the Mariners side. Cano, 1-for-3. Cruz, 1-for-3. Kyle Seager, 1-for-2. He has an RBI. Mitch Haniger, 2-for-4. I was thinking about dropping Mitch Haniger. He's just been so bad since he came back from the DL. And Ben Gamel made a horrendous base running error last night that Didi Gregorius took advantage of, but he went 2-for-4. Dude, what is up with these guys rocking this hair beard situation in the dead of summer? It's been so brutal here in our area in New York. It just makes me think, like, how hot are you between Ben Gamel and Jason Worth and Charlie Blackman? Like, you don't want to take it down with the hair or the beard?
I agree with you. I don't get it. I'm somebody, I can't grow a beard, Mike. It will not come in at all. My daughters would strangle me. My daughters get on me every couple of days. They call me Pokey, so I have to shave all the time. But you're right, though. It's 95 degrees, humid, hot as hell, and yet you got a beard going. You know, I mean, that boy, we got to do the beard now. I agree with you. I don't like the rocket either. No beards here. If I was those guys, I'd shave it as well. You're outdoors playing every day too, and all this other stuff. That can't be comfortable.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like I respect that they're cultivating a look, but you got to be kidding me with the beard. Like the hair, fine. You know, like you want to grow it out, it's fine. You're wearing a hat anyway. You're going to be sweating anyway. But the beard, it's got to be brutal. Anyway, the stat I wanted to mention: Chase Headley hit his 21st double last night. In his last 30 games, could you take a ballpark of what Chase Headley is hitting?
He's hot again over of late. So I imagine it's pretty high. You can see when he plays, he's also hitting the shift again. Why he was successful in April and part of May was that he was hitting the holes. If they're going to play, they're going to shift him and give him that shortstop wide open, he was hitting it. So last 30 games, I'll say he's hitting 290.
317. It's crazy because people still have a perception that Headley's overmatched, and yeah, maybe against really good pitching, he's always going to be. Who isn't? But he's hitting 317, Chase Headley is. It's really crazy. 21 doubles on the season, it's pretty good. There hasn't been a lot of extended power there. Four homers. He's the only third baseman in the Yankees that's hit any homers.
There's been no power.
Only four homers out of the third base spot from the Yankees, which is why they, you know, Frazier was part of this deal and whatever. But Headley playing first last night, and Todd Frazier playing third, so they might have a little bit of something going here. It's good that
they don't.
Headley's comfortable.
They what? Don't. They, I no, mean, fantasy wise,
well,
it's not looking forward here either. Because fantasy wise, Headley's a donut. I mean, it's an empty batting average. And that won't sustain. He's platooning now. He's not going to bat versus left-handed because he can't bat right-handed, and he's got no power. I mean, it's empty. And Frazier, you know, Yankee fans can be all happy about this deal. He's just a really Headley clone with a little bit more power.
Yeah.
That's really all he is. He's going to strike out a ton, make a whole bunch of outs, bat around 210, but he'll hit, you know, instead of four home runs, he might hit eight.
You know, so that's what I was going to ask there. You. Do you see some upside for the power and more than eight? Like, you see him getting on a run here. I'm not holding my breath waiting for it, but obviously that's what the Yankees are hoping for. He's a right-handed hitter, so it's not necessarily some of the other acquisitions that they could make where you'd see a spike in home runs, but I don't know. I don't know that I have high expectations here. It's a nice story and everything because he's a local guy, but you know, to you and I, we've been following this for a while. I guess hitting 204.
There's a reason people have been asking, why is Frazier playing third base and not first base? Because Frazier has some extensive time at first base. Not a whole lot, but he has a whole lot more than Headley. So people are wondering why Frazier wasn't put at first base to keep Headley at third. All you had to do, and this is extremely true, and I've been tweeting about this for a couple of weeks, Headley's been terrible at third base. And it's not so much making errors. I've never seen a third baseman aim the ball as much as Headley does to every base, and it's caused the Yankees outs because he aims the ball on double plays and it takes extra time. And you heard Girardi mention this in the press conference about 2 days before the trade that, you know, we're not turning double plays that should be made. That was aimed at Headley. Because about this, Cash has had some problems. Headley's had a lot of problems. So I think you saw it there with Frazier, who's not a gold glover either at third base. But I think you've seen that. Why? I think Girardi just finally had enough. Where teams just keeps giving away outs, and that's why he's putting Headley at first, Frazier at third. But like I said, the only difference between Frazier and Headley is that Frazier won't bat as high. Headley will actually give you a higher batting average, but Frazier will hit you some more home runs. He has 16 home runs on the season, but that's a lot of that in Citi Field. Some of those balls that go out to Citi Field aren't going out in Yankee Stadium. You know, it's not like he's going to hit 16 home runs at Yankee Stadium from this point on. He may give you another 8 to 10 home runs.
Yeah. Moving on to another game, Max Scherzer, George, who I have on my team. He's obviously in the discussion for Cy Young. Last night started off the game as rough as you. Yeah, last night started off the game as rough as you could possibly start it off. In his first 10 pitches of the night, he gave up three homers to the first three guys that got up. It's only the fifth time in Major League Baseball history a team has let off in that manner. So Scherzer just didn't have it last night. He lasts five, gives up five earned runs. He had nine strikeouts and doesn't factor in the decision. Luckily, Washington came back to tie it before ultimately losing it in extras. But I got a win out of Fernando Rodney last night. How crazy is that? But in any event, Max Scherzer, really rough start. But I guess these things happen, right?
That's the way I look at it. Just what you said. It happens. He's still got your nine strikeouts. So at least he stayed in the game long enough to get you those Ks, so that helped out somewhat.
And I got a win down at Fernando Rodney, of all things. You know, I was sort of no worse for wear as far as the decision was concerned.
Well, how nice for you. But most fantasy owners didn't quite get that. Surprised anybody that shares got lit up last night, but it happens. You know, it's you move on. Not like you knock up a surgery in your lineup next week. Oh, I'm going to bench Scherzer now. No, you're not going to do that. Maybe DFS-wise, and you should have been starting him DFS last night anyway in Arizona against a good hitting team. I just chalk it up as one of those things, Mike, and I move on.
Yeah, so Peralta, A.J. Pollock, and Jake Lamb are the three that went yard on him. Jake Lamb is 23rd homer of the season, George, hitting .277. I think you're getting a little bit higher average than you might have expected, and the 23 homers, he's pacing obviously to a pretty big number.
Sweet, right? Sweet. He's got a lineup now when J.D. Martinez gets in there, too, when he recovers, and he's okay. He's only day-to-day. He'll be fine. So you're talking, look at, I mean, Pollock, Goldschmidt, Martinez, Lamb, and they got a whole bunch of complimentary players like there too. Peralta, Drury, Tomasi ever returns. Owings has had a nice season. This team can match. If they can make, I don't know if they can really compete with Washington and or the Dodgers, but if they can make another pitching addition, if they could ever get Sonny Gray or someone of that ilk, they would be an interesting team come October because you could survive with three starting pitchers. And with Greinke, Corbin, and maybe this new addition, they'd be a fun team to see.
David Peralta has 300 at bats on the season. He's hitting .325. Is he the most undersold, under talked about player in Major League Baseball right now?
I'm not gonna say he's the most. He's certainly one of them. We sort of forget what he can do. There are always players like that though that we sort of forget that there's good solid hitters that can just go under the radar for whatever reason, mainly because they're on a team with other superstars. You know, who when you think in Arizona, who are you talking about first? Goldschmidt. And then it's Lamb. You mentioned 23 home runs. And then Pollock, because he's a second-round pick that we were waiting to break out for a while. Now they got J.D. Martinez. You don't even come to Peralta. It takes a while to even think about him. He's sort of an afterthought there. But you mentioned good professional hitter, .325. Got double-digit bombs, too, and he steals bases. He'll steal double-digit bases by the end of the season. What's not to like?
Yeah, his last night was his 10th homer on the season. He's hitting .325. A.J. Pollock, that was his fourth homer. He's hitting .294. Jake Lamb, like I said, hitting .277, but a .933 OPS. Goldschmidt, .310, .992 OPS. You mentioned a bunch of other guys. Brandon Drury's having a good season. I have him in my lineup every night because he's got a lot of positional flexibility. He's hitting .278. He had another hit in an RBI last night. So a big game for the Diamondbacks. They walk it off against the Nationals after blowing the 5-run lead that they had built up. So Fernando Rodney gets the win due to the walk-off, his fourth win of the season. Godley started, gave up 4 earned runs, doesn't factor in the decision. So that's about it for baseball for the day. We're going to transition over to football in the second hour. A bunch of stuff to talk about, suspensions and whatnot, but the last thing I'll say, no decision for Steven Matz last night, George. Michael Conforto hit 2 homers as the Mets, for the Mets. So Michael Conforto, 2 more homers. That's one positive that you can take out of that, and they do get the win against Oakland.
Yeah, listen, leave Conforto. If I'm the Mets, just leave Conforto alone. Put him in the lineup and let the kid play. I don't know what the Mets are doing. I don't think anybody knows what the Mets are doing half the time. They should start their sell-off with them next week.
Yeah. 4 RBIs for him. No decision for Matz. Blackburn takes the loss for the A's. Blevins save. An inning 2/3 for Blevins last night. Mike and George back to close out hour number 1 before we move on to football. We'll be back.
Welcome back, Roto Experts in the Morning, finishing out the baseball part of our show. So a couple of big trades happened this week, right? J.D. Martinez goes from the Detroit Tigers to the Arizona Diamondbacks. And then we saw the Yankee trade for Todd Frazier and David Robertson. You know, when you think about this J.D. Martinez trade, I mean, listen, Martinez fantasy-wise probably doesn't get as much love as he should. Very good professional hitter with Detroit. Having Miguel Cabrera hitting in front of you, Justin Upton, Ian Kinsler, lots of good opportunities there. But he actually goes to a much better hitter's ballpark in Arizona, which is really the equivalent of pretty close to Coors Field. Ball flies out of there. He did take a pitch to the hand the other day, so he hasn't played in a couple of games, but he will return. I would imagine if not this weekend, then early next week. So I'm certainly putting him back in my lineup here. And I love the trade with JD Martinez. But I'll never understand, though, why Arizona, or I should say Detroit, felt the need to do this deal. They got two low-level prospects, right? Or actually three, but all low-level guys. None of these guys were in the top 10 in the Arizona system. I understand you wanted to trade Martinez, got to save some cash there, whatever it might be. But I'll never understand why they felt the need to make this trade earlier this week. Why? This is a deal you could have made at the deadline. Why aren't you waiting the extra 9, 10 days and see if a team suffers an injury? I completely understand that right now, at this moment in time, hitters are not valuable for contending teams. Most of the contending teams are loaded. No one truly needed an outfielder. And that's all fine and good. Maybe this is the best deal you could have gotten, but it wasn't the deadline. You had 9 more days. We saw Carlos Correa get hurt, right? Trey Turner's gotten hurt. An outfielder could easily get hurt over the next 9 days on a contending team where your value goes up. And what's the worst-case scenario here for the Tigers? You know, even the deal with Arizona dries up, and now you can't trade Martinez for anyone? Who cares? The players you receive are unlikely to be anything major league-wise, certainly not anywhere near stars. These are players that just are going to end up being blah players. Yeah, the gamble was worth it for me. I don't understand why they felt they needed to do that deal then. I thought it was a mistake. And if you listen to Fantasy Black Book with Joe Pisapia, Matt Modica, and I on Tuesday, you already know that I didn't like the Yankee trade either. As we were discussing that trade while it was going down, it was all over Twitter, so we were able to talk about it. I already talked about Todd Frazier, who's really having a terrible season. Some pop there, but nothing in as far as average is concerned. I mean, Robertson and Conley are nice. They'll help the bullpen out. They'll make the bullpen extremely long for the Yankees. Like, really end games at the 5 innings. But the Yankees still aren't truly a contending team. They're not a World Series team. And to give up on Blake Rutherford already seemed to me to be a little foolish. You know, I think his team, the Yankees, should have been hoarding these prospects. I have no problem with the Yankees trading some of these guys for players they can control for a couple seasons. You know, if they were going to give up Rutherford, they probably should have gone all in and gone at the Quintana. When he was traded last weekend, I would have preferred that. At least because Quintana, you would be with the Yankees for 3 more years. I understand it would take more than Rutherford and Clark to get to Quintana, but that's the direction I would have liked to have seen them take. Not to mention, as far as baseball is concerned, they needed a starter much more than they needed a reliever. Yankees have won 2 of 3 since the deal, so maybe it'll work out for them. But here's something else I would consider here. I do the closer report. Robertson, obviously, right now is not closing for you, but if the Yankees do implode over the next 10 days, there'll be nothing to stop Cashman for them trading Robertson again to a team. So that could be something you may want to look for. Maybe you don't want to release Robertson just quite yet. Maybe he still could be traded to a team that needs a closer. But that being said, I think that's wishful thinking. If you need to move on from Robertson, I don't really have a problem with it. That's just the way it is. Mike and I would discuss it briefly. I think there'll be 6 to 8 more current closers, guys like Jim Johnson, Ramos, Bud Norris, guys who are closing currently for their teams who are going to be moved. So if you need saves, I think you just have to wait until July 31st and you'll have a chance to get them. You're going to want to watch that waiver wire. You might want to even make some speculative adds right now to add guys to your fantasy team. Use that fab. Take a guess on who's going to be closing. Rodas Vizcaino of Atlanta, somebody who might help you like that. Take a look. Like I said, a lot of teams are going to be moving on, and we're moving on. Mike Blewett and I will be back after the break. Talk a little fantasy football during the last hour.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Hour number two on the Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for joining us this morning. Hour number one, we talked baseball. Hour number two, we're going to turn the page over to football. And George, we're getting right into training camp right here. Rookies have reported. Teams are going to start piling into training camps here all within the next week. Obviously, there's plenty to talk about from a fantasy football perspective. You and I are in the midst of drafts. I know your Dynasty League draft wrapped up. Mine is still going, if you can believe it. I don't know why an expert draft that's only 6 rounds would need to take more than a couple of days, but we're on day 13.
Going on 2 weeks.
I guess Yeah, it's day 13 of it. Guys just don't have their stuff together. It's a little frustrating. In any event, drafts are happening now. Mock drafts, real drafts, the whole thing. What is one thing that you're looking forward to? Your Scott Fishbowl draft, which is a big industry-wide draft. Mine is still going. I hope yours is wrapped up by now.
Oh, yeah. No, I've been done drafting now for a couple of days. All my drafts have completed. So it's good and bad, right? Because you're doing three at once, so it's a little hectic, and you're looking forward to your next pick, and you get angry when people take forever. But now it's a letdown. I'm done. You know, no more drafts now. I don't even know where my next draft is. I have to look at some dates of some leagues here. So, I said it's a little bit of a letdown. Now, you're in late July now, so you're still drafting, but it's not really draft season yet. That'll come up in a couple of weeks here. I am trying to set up my home league draft. So, that's what I'm looking forward to, Mike. Drafting. To me, there's just nothing like drafting. I love drafting. It's like Christmas morning for adults.
Yeah, I mean, our one of our guests, John Lobb, and a guy that listens to us all the time, is set up a 2QB draft, which I think I'm going to be in. You may be in that as well. I think I'm off from drafts this next week, although Scott Fishbowl, I think we are the slowest, excuse me, of the 60 divisions that are in this massive industry-wide league. It includes both experts and fans. We are the slowest of the 60 divisions. I confirm that. So that continues to creep along.
Aren't you proud?
Right now. Yeah, really proud of that. So we're going to talk about second-year players that are primed for a breakout season after the break, an article written by James Natio of the Roto Expert staff, which you can find in the exclusive Edge draft package, an exclusive Edge football package. So you can have that all season long. For your drafts, you'll have plenty of prep, and you can enter promo code THEKING for a special discount there. So we're going to talk about that article after the break. Obviously, some suspensions are being handed down. We don't know exactly what's happening with the Ezekiel Elliott incidents yet. Bengals quarterback Adam Jones suspended for the 2017 opener. And, George, I think GMs are just happy to have these guys rolling back into training camp.
Absolutely, because now you control them, right? Now you control their time, the curfews and all this other stuff. When it's that little time between mini camp and training camp, where a lot of stuff seems to happen here always that drives coaches nuts.
Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit about that if we need to. But more importantly, we're going to talk about second-year breakout players next. Tyler Boyd be a guy that bounces back from a less than impressive rookie season? It's Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Listen to us on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network for the next hour. Back in the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Hit us up on Twitter today at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. We had a poll up there about Carlos Martinez. Frankly, whether or not you like his blue hair. It's weird. Weird time to do it, but whatever. It probably beats. His hair's kind of long. It's not like a Ben Gamel situation where he's going full caveman, but he's mixing it up. Anyway, I hope you're listening to us on the app. Download the Fantasy Sports Radio app in the iTunes Store on Google Play. Don't stream it, just download the app. Download for free, anytime, anywhere. So, George, wanted to talk a little bit about second-year breakout players. You can find this article from James Natio, a member of the Roto Expert staff, on second-year players primed for a breakout season. And by the way, you can enter promo code THEKING for a special discount on the Roto Experts exclusive Edge NFL package. In any event, player number one on his list. Now, obviously, ending up with Le'Veon Bell, he says here, Le'Veon Bell or Zeke Elliott on the squad helps, but he can make the case that mining for this year's Spencer Ware or Melvin Gordon or Michael Thomas is the real difference between teams that go the distance and the ones who end up disappointing their owners. So the first player he has on this list is Tyler Boyd. Obviously, Cincinnati player last year. I totally can cop to being a huge supporter of his last year. I really liked him, despite the fact that he was a rookie wide receiver. I just thought he had a real opportunity. I thought he would ultimately beat out Brandon LaFell and be the clear number two there. And it just didn't happen. He had 54 catches for 603 yards, just the one touchdown. He had a few rushes as well. But it's not a horrendous rookie season, but his 81 targets are compared to Brandon LaFell's 106 targets And he just fell a little bit short of where I was gonna, where he was gonna be. I took him in double digit rounds in all of those drafts, but would you expect a potential shift here for him to increase what he did last season? Do you think he could be the legitimate complement to AJ Green?
No. No, I wouldn't agree with this really at all when you think about it. And I like Tyler Boyd, just like you were. I liked him a whole bunch last year. I still like him now, but you still got LaFell there. You know, Ed Mixon, right? So they're gonna try and run the ball more. Right? Eifert's back. He's healthy again. Wasn't at the first half of last season. That's a lot of red zone targets that are going to come his way because Dalton, Eifert is Dalton's BFF in the red zone there. You know, you added John Ross, too. That might push Boyd down the depth chart and down the target list there. Too many problems here for me to assume Boyd has the year we thought he might have last year. I still think Boyd's a useful receiver NFL-wise. Fantasy-wise, 10, 12-team leagues? No. 10-team leagues, I doubt I'm even drafting him. 12-team leagues, maybe as a reserve. But he's really more waiver wire fodder for me, Mike. I don't see him having a good season.
Yeah, I mean, James is pretty bold here. He's thinking upwards of 1,500 yards and 75 receptions and 6 touchdowns. He really likes him a lot. I like him, as
James
George
smoking
said,
the good stuff.
I think George is spot on. I think he's a really useful NFL receiver. The drafting of John Ross is concerning. AJ Green's not going anywhere. They've already paid him. He's locked in. He's one of the top 4 or 5 receivers in the entire NFL. They know that. But they drafted John Ross. It's not a Brandon LaFell replacement. It's them realizing that maybe Tyler Boyd isn't the guy that they thought he was when they drafted him in the second round. Now, I do think it's an odd pick from the Bengals. I think they needed more help in other areas than receiver because I think Boyd can be useful. I just don't know that I'm expecting a breakout season. George detailed a bunch of stuff. George, in general, I don't like the direction that the Bengals are going at all. They took a step back last year, and I think at best they tread water this year. They lost a couple of offensive linemen. They replaced them with Andre Smith and a Cedric Ogbuehe. Ogbuehe, I think that's Ogbuehe. I can't. It's a difficult name to pronounce, so I apologize if I got that wrong. But in any event, he slots in at left tackle, and he struggled when he was playing at other positions. So I think they have a lot of issues here potentially on the offensive line. It's why I'm not as high on Joe Mixon as some other people are. I actually don't think they'll necessarily be able to run the ball as well as they want to. But, George, I think you detailed some of the things I'm concerned about. It's Eifert. It's Green. It's them trying to run the ball as best they can. The only thing is I wonder, has this defense taken a step back as well? Will they be playing from behind enough for Dalton to have to increase his percentage of throws?
Listen, it's just when you look at everything on the team as a whole, you just don't see it being a big season for Boyd. It's hard to see that. Now, listen, I'm not going to just say, oh, they drafted John Ross, it means they hate Tyler Boyd. I don't necessarily think that's true. You know, we don't know what the draft was. Green Bay was Cincinnati just thinking best player available, and it happened to be Ross, or were they thinking, hey, we do need somebody? Because when you look at it, I sort of agree with you. Man, there are other positions that really have need. But, you know, sometimes teams think that's a mistake when you're in the draft, to draft by need. You should be drafting the best player available when your slot comes up. So I get that. It really depends on organizational philosophy there. So I don't knock them for that. But certainly an eyebrow raiser, right? Because everything you said is true. I mean, Green is locked in there. We know he's the number one. Eifert's back. You know, you already had LaFell and Boyd. Why'd you feel we need to add another receiver? It's not like it's a big shock that your offensive line needed work, but we also know that during the draft, the offensive line, it wasn't a strong draft for that. So it makes you wonder what's going on here.
Yeah, you got some defensive players that are getting a little bit older, too. It stinks to me like the Philip Dorsett pick that the Colts made, which was totally unnecessary. They had receivers there already. They needed help in other areas, and I just wonder if this is I'm starting to get the feeling that this is like the last year of the Marvin Lewis era, because they're going to go another year. I don't see them making the playoffs, and it will have been a really long time that he's been there, and they haven't won one playoff game. Are they better than they once were? Yes. And I preach stability a lot, but who wants the consistency that the Bengals have of not winning playoff games?
It's also that, and also all the trouble these players keep getting into. Jones being suspended again. And then again, you draft Joe Mixon, so maybe you don't care. You know, maybe it just doesn't make if you're talking the talk, you're not walking the walk. You're not doing both. So maybe it doesn't matter here. But I would agree with you. They don't, and even when they make the playoffs, they don't win a game. So it does make you wonder what's happening.
So move on to the next player, Josh Doctson, another rookie wide receiver from last year. There's nowhere to go but up. I mean, he didn't do anything last year. They lost Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson due to free agency. You and I have talked about Terrell Pryor a million times on this show. Could you see him getting just a huge number of targets? You obviously have Reed there, and you have Pryor there. You have Crowder there. Is Doctson the guy that's going to have a breakout season here? James in this article is saying maybe 65 catches, 1,000 yards, 5 touchdowns with a 95 target. You know, he's being pretty bold with these predictions, but that's the point of the article. He wants guys to have big breakout seasons. And is Josh Doctson a guy that you can see having that?
I can get behind more. He's doing best case scenario numbers here, but sure. This is one where I could get behind here, where Doctson could have a breakout because of what you mentioned. No Garçon, no DeSean Jackson. Reed, as much as we love him, gets hurt every year. All right, so there's no way he's going to play 16 games. I could get behind this, that maybe this is Doctson's breakout season, second year in the system, so he should know the system pretty cold here. And as much as we love Pryor, who's to say he's going to be great in a brand-new quarterback, brand-new system? Yeah, this is a converted quarterback to receiver. Maybe he does have a learning curve. Maybe that once again opens the door for Doctson even more. Crowder, maybe he is nothing more than a slot guy. Maybe putting him in as the opposite and the number two wide receiver is a mistake. So there's a chance here. I like the opportunity for Doctson, which is why I'm on board here. We know the talent is there. Just got to stay on the field, get that chemistry with Cousins, and go. Because let's face it, the running game here, questionable at best. You know, the defense, pretty much the same thing. If they had to win games, they had to compete in the NFC East, it's going to be because Kirk Cousins is throwing the ball all over the place.
Yeah, it's what they do well. And one thing I would qualify, I often say on this show that wide receivers that move from one team to another, there's not a long history of success, of big success. You know, Brandon Marshall is more the exception than the rule. But at Washington specifically, they have had success, right? Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson were very capable at Washington and fantasy assets after moving from other teams. So conceivably, Pryor could slot in there and do well. Doctson was injured all of last year. 2 catches for 66 yards on 7 targets, nothing after week 2. So I think there's something here. Jordan Reed is often injured. I think it's a wrestling match, though, at times. As many times as Cousins might throw the ball, 600-plus times, at some point, you have to say, well, who's going to get the most targets, Pryor or Reed or Crowder or whomever? A lot of people are picking each of those guys as their favorite player. Doctson is a guy who's probably in the background a little bit from those three, but maybe that makes him a candidate for this breakout season. I kind of understand where he's coming from, George, and while I won't sign off on it because I'd rather have some other receivers there, I guess there is potential here.
Yeah, he's reaching deep here. So, and I get that. We're looking for breakout players. Guys come out of nowhere. Guys you can get in your last round pick. So that's all fine and good. I'm not on board with the Boyd pick, but here I could see it. I could see the logic of going with it here because he's probably third string right now. So he's already in the starting lineup. Most teams start 3 wide receivers.
Yeah, exactly. They have a lot of 3 wide receiver sets there as well. We're going to talk Derrick Henry when we get back. Austin Hooper. And Kenny Dixon, which, gosh, I think I'm exhausted talking about Kenny Dixon. But George and I will talk about him anyway after the break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are the Roto Experts. We're back on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Thanks for joining us this morning. This Saturday edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. After this show, it's College Football Today. Normally with Joe Lisi and Rich Germanello, I'm subbing for Joe Lisi today. So hopefully you don't mind listening to my voice for an extra couple of hours. Or if you're interested in college football today, we're going to talk Big 12 overall. Take a look at that conference, all of those teams. Is anybody going to be able to get into the college football playoff? But obviously we're going to be talking about Ole Miss and Hugh Freeze as well. George, you and I talked a little bit before the show about the disaster that happened at Ole Miss, a coach getting busted for basically contacting escorts is a complicated way in which they discovered it, but really not the guy you want representing your university.
No, probably not. I would think that goes against quite a few morals and values there.
Yeah, then fired. He was going to be fired for a moral turpitude clause, but he resigned. So he got out. You can't fire me. I quit. Kind of deal. So that's what happened there. Anyway, transitioning back to fantasy football and the NFL level, we're going to talk about Derrick Henry. George, he was a guy that I loved in draft last year. Loved it. I was like, I'm getting him right where I want him, just sliding past that fifth round. I think he's going to take some carries against DeMarco Murray, and boy, was I wrong. It wasn't a zero. I mean, he had 110 carries, 490 yards, and five touchdowns. In fact, in a Week 15 game, I think I remember playing him in this game, in nine carries and a couple of touchdowns. So he just didn't have anything. He didn't do anything for the first half of the season. So he was very much just a complimentary back to DeMarco Murray, who ripped off over 1,600 total yards and 12 touchdowns. But James Natio says in this article, Henry saw Henry tilt the 15, you know, after week one. With 110 carries on the season, 490 yards, there's room for growth. He expects Henry's carries to head north of 200 this season and his yardage to double. Do you think that's reasonable?
I don't think, like I said, I'm not worried about DeMarco Murray. I'm taking him top 10 running back there. He's an RB1 for me. Henry, I do think he'll have a bigger role this season, but not massively bigger. I don't think he's taking really anything away from Murray. I think he'll have a bigger role because I think Tennessee's going to have the ball more on offense. I think they're a very dangerous offense. I think the defense is bad. I think this is one of the better teams in the AFC. Not someone that can compete with New England, not yet, but a good team. So I'm on board with Henry fantasy-wise. I'm on board with him NFL-wise. But within reason. You know, if this is the normal NFL of, I shouldn't say no, if this is the NFL of 30 years ago, Mike, when we first started playing 20 years ago, where teams would all go by RBBCs, I really wouldn't be interested in having anything other than a handcuff. Nowadays, though, all these teams use two running backs to some degree, so he gets drafted in round 8, round 9, because, once again, every running back has value. So that's where I am with Henry. I like him. Do I think he'd be a good start if Murray got hurt? Yes. Does Murray get hurt? Sometimes. He's banged up at points last season as well. Most running backs are. So I'm interested in Henry. I think he'll do a little bit better than last season, but that may be better in yardage, maybe not better in touchdowns. We don't know how that's going to be. So I'm not drafting him unless I'm comfortable where the value is. I'm not reaching for him.
Yeah, George is right. He was banged up, but he ended up starting 16 games, DeMarco Murray did. He ceded carries to Henry in a couple of those, didn't play out full games, which is frustrating for fantasy owners. But look, if you drafted DeMarco Murray, he vastly outperformed his ADP last year, so I don't want to hear any complaints. He got double-digit carries in every single game last year. How about one more thing on this? 346 times last year, DeMarco Murray touched the ball. Does that concern you going into this season? It obviously doesn't, but I wanted to see if I can at least kick the tires on a concern for you.
Does it concern me? Sure, but Tennessee, once again, one of the best offensive lines. You know, Mariota's only getting better. I just don't see it being a huge problem here. Do I think one of these days he's going to run out of gas? Yes. Could it be this year? Sure, nothing would shock me. Running backs, man, these are all really car wrecks they're getting into every hit they take. So sooner or later, that's going to take its toll here. And Murray is not, you know, he's not some young little kid anymore.
He's 29.
He's up there in age. He's 29. That's a dangerous age for a running back. So I think you do have to be concerned somewhat. But you know, then you think about the year, 2015, he only had, 237 touches. So maybe you're okay for a year. You know, he had over 450 the year before that, then 200, then 200 less, then 100 more. So I'm not going to overthink it, Mike. Like I said, I don't have as a top five back, but top 10, I'm comfortable with that. Second round pick for me, and I'll go with him.
Do you think Murray does regress from last year, though?
Last year, with 12, almost 1,300 yards, another three, almost 40, yeah, almost 1,700 yards here. We have 9, 12 touchdowns here. Boy, that's a really good season. We're probably not giving him enough love for what he did last year. Almost 1,700 total yards, 12 touchdowns. Yeah,
they targeted him 67 times in the passing game. He caught 53 passes last year in PPR leagues.
That's not surprising.
He killed it. I'm just saying he killed it in PPR leagues.
I'm going to say, you know, I don't like using the word regression here, Mike, because it sounds like I'm down on him. I just don't think he's going to have as big a workload because they have so many other weapons they can use here. And I think Tennessee also will sort of believe that they're a threat in the playoffs, so they're going to want to keep him fresh. They understand they have Henry. This is where they could give him a bigger role. If you got a bigger lead in the second half, you don't need to run Murray as much. Yeah, you know, you can split the carries somewhat. So I'll say regression, yes, but not as far as really the talent's concerned, just in the overall touches.
Depending on the rules that you play in, I'm saying this to all listeners, depending on the rules that you play in regarding keepers, Derrick Henry is a guy you're really going to want to target. You're going to want him 2 years from now, and you probably want him this year to be an asset, next year to be a bigger asset, and 2 years from now probably be a massive asset. This offensive line likely isn't going anywhere. They graded out as the best offensive line Pro Football Focus last year. I did the offensive line rankings, which should be up on the Roto Experts exclusive Edge NFL package soon, and I have them ranked second, only behind Dallas. So gives you all that is evidence that Derrick Henry is a very good asset long term and possibly short term. So just we can't promise too much this year, but you know I see where James is going here. Anyway, I'll get off of Kenny Dixon for a second. We'll do him last. Austin Hooper. His sneaky sleeper pick. Hooper was a very slow-to-warm rookie, as he says here, but came on strong late, looked comfortable when he got on the field. Hooper finished with 19 catches on 27 targets, 14.3 yards per carry, and 271 yards to go with three touchdowns. Now he's going to have a full season being the starter with Matt Ryan at quarterback. So, Austin Hooper, a potential sleeper here at tight end. What are your thoughts?
Well, I have no problem with him. You know, but when you go, who are you taking out? You know, if you're going to go top 10, he's not going to crack a top 10. Yeah, he's just not. I don't care how much you think he's sleepy. He's not cracking a top 10. I mean, you're taking out almost a Pro Bowl player. You're not going to put Bennett in your top 10. Ertz, you know, are we discounting Rudolph and all the damage he did last year? So who are you taking out of your top 10? I could see him squeezing at the top 12. Because, you know, maybe you have Doyle at 11, Ebron at 12. I could see him squeezing in over one of those two if you don't believe. So I get that, but there's no way, just no way I can possibly put him in my top 10. So I'm not drafting him. That's pretty much that. I mean, not unless someone goes bananas and starts drafting tight ends early where they're taking, you know, like Mike Cardano did in the one league last year where he took like three or four tight ends and screwed over.
Three tight end strategy.
Right.
I think he'll do it again this year just to mess with us. And none of us had any tight ends.
He'll do it just to spite us. That's Mike for
you.
So that wouldn't surprise me at all. But I'm looking at my, I'm looking at my rankings here for tight end. And you look at, you know, Hooper's going to be in there with the Hunter Henrys, Doyle's, Ebron's. I mentioned Kobe Fleen, who I think has a rebound. So I do like him. I'm not discounting him at all. But tight end is so deep. That's the bottom line. Tight end is so deep. I don't need to take a chance here. You know, why would I want to take him? All right, so that's my issue there. Other than that, I'm fine.
I understand. I think in two tight end leagues where something like a Scott Fishbowl, which is the industry league that I talked about earlier, tight ends are carry a lot more value because of their ability to pick up an extra point and a half for first downs. I think that Austin Hooper, I know, did go off the board, but I mean, we're talking a league where in a
that's
12
a different type
league,
of league, yeah.
Yeah, that's we're talking 30 tight ends are being drafted, so that's very unique.
Like I drafted three.
Honestly, I got to the point where the guys that are left have no value, so I'll just wait for somebody to get hurt, maybe pick them up with a fab budget at some point. So, in any event, Austin Hooper, I kind of like where he's going. He says he's going to finish as a top 12 tight end for the season. I don't think it's crazy. Matt Ryan did work with Tony Gonzalez in the past, so there is reason to believe that he works well with a tight end. So it is what it is. Last one, George. We're going to do it quick because we have talked about him on this network quite a bit. It's Kenny Dixon. Obviously, he's suspended for a month, and you got Terrence West in there, Danny Woodhead. Do you think Kenny Dixon has a breakout season? He's predicting over 1,000 yards and 4 touchdowns for Kenny Dixon.
Ooh, four whole touchdowns. I think he'll hit the four touchdowns. 1,000 yards, no. He told me he's going to only play 12 games at most. What makes anyone think he's going to show up in great shape? Don't these guys who usually get suspended always have independent groin injuries, hamstring injuries, because they haven't done anything for a month, or at least not anything, done anything hard for a month? Who's to say that Terrence West isn't playing well? And when did that Baltimore become this great offense where he's going to come in and all of a sudden run on the ball all the time? You know, the defense isn't what it used to be. They may not be winning games in the second half where they can just run the ball with impunity. So, listen, I like Dixon. I did draft him in a league or two because the value is there, and I'll take my chance on a starting running back in round five. But to just automatically assume that he's going to be great when he returns, I think is crazy. Once again, I'm not reaching for him. But, yeah, if I do grab Dixon, let's say if I get him round seven, round eight, and maybe get Terrence West at a round or two or even three rounds later, that does guarantee me one starting running back. So I'll take that. So I do like the deal. If I think I can pair them both together, I like it. But if not, no, I'm not seeing big things happening here.
Baltimore is filled with fantasy players that none of the experts like. Flacco, Wallace, Terrence West, Rashad Perriman. People aren't sure what to do with Jeremy Maclin right now. Kenny Dixon suspended for a month. Get Danny Woodhead. Good luck. I hope he stays healthy. We'll be back. Talk a little bit more fantasy football after the break. It's Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I hope I'm not up in any of my drafts right now, George. After I just kind of talk smack about some of my fellow entrants, I hope I'm not up in these drafts.
I hate to tell you, Mike, you're definitely not one of the quicker drafters. You're not terrible, one of the quicker drafters.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I try to pre-rank as much as I can, but I'm not always great about it. It's not me. I just drafted Robert Turbin in the 17th round. Look, I have seven running backs. What are you going to do? Robert Turbin, there's a little bit of upside there. It seems like he's beat out Marlon Mack for the number two job behind Frank Gore. I'll take it in the 17th round, right? We're not drafting kickers or defenses to give folks an idea. We have to start three flexes. Is that right?
I think it's technically four flexes, but one's a super flex.
True, yeah. So there you go. So how did you end up? What were your quarterbacks in that team? It's a super flex league, meaning you can start one of the flex positions as a quarterback, which from a strategy perspective, most people are going to gravitate towards starting a second quarterback because it can earn you the most average points. It'll be rare instances where that doesn't happen. But, George, who were your two QBs there?
All right, so we're talking about the Scott Fishbowl here for people who are just checking in. I do have two. I think I have four quarterbacks in my roster, but two of the Jets, the Jets duo. I covered myself there with Hackenberg and McCown. Got him in the last two rounds. And I'll admit, the last round, I've just fallen asleep here, and I needed to get this over with, so I took Hackenberg. My starters, though, are Aaron Rodgers and Tyrod Taylor, and I'm pretty happy about that. I know some people are really on board with Tyrod Taylor going off this season, being a top 10 fantasy quarterback. That would be great, and I would take that, but I didn't draft him for that. I'm just hoping for him to be a top 12, top 15 guy, and I'll be fine.
Yeah, I have Breeze and Roethlisberger there. I covered myself with Tom Savage, which might be temporary, but you know, I expect Savage to sort of hang on to that job for at least for a bit. I really wanted Mike Glennon at that third quarterback spot just because of all of those guys towards the end of the rankings. You know, if you're ranking 1 through 32, I feel like Glennon is a guy that's in the 20s that has some upside, right? Because the Bears might still be trailing a lot.
Yes. I don't mind Glennon. He's somebody I would have loved to have as my third quarterback. Unfortunately, I didn't get him there. So I think Glennon's going to be fine. I would agree. I think, really, you think they're going to be trailing, Mike? I can almost guarantee you they'll be trailing most games. So they'll be throwing the ball plenty in the second half.
Yeah. So, in any event, just give you folks an idea. There, you can extract some depth at quarterback even a little bit later in drafts. Mike Glennon is a guy. I'd have to see where he's being ranked right now, so I'll look it up. But Mike Glennon is a guy, George, where, you know, I think if you're taking a shot in leagues like this where it gets pretty deep and it's a two-quarterback league, I can see Mike Glennon certainly finishing in the top 24.
Sure. That wouldn't shock me at all. I mean, I have a 28, but I could easily move up a couple of slots. Once again, for me, there's only 23 really fantasy quarterbacks I would think about taking in it. When I say think about that, I like taking in a two-quarterback league. So anybody from 24 on is really just all guesswork here. If you mentioned Tom Savage, if I knew he was going to start all season, I'd move him up more, but I don't know. You know, most of these guys, that's the problem. We don't know if they're going to start all season. So it's sort of a mix there. Joe Flacco and Alex Smith are two on the outside because I'm just not big fans, especially Alex Smith, that doesn't throw the ball into the secondary whatsoever here. So, listen, a lot of this will change. There'll be injuries. There always are. You know, maybe Tom Savage is only going to start the first couple of weeks. Then it is Deshaun Watson. Then he moves up in the rankings a little bit. We'll see this as well. So, I think Superflex legs are the way to go. I think it's just so much more strategy rather than just telling you, wait till round 10 to grab the, you know, grab Mariota or Cousins. That's boring to me. I would much rather play in a Superflex league. And I think Superflex leagues are better than two quarterback leagues. This way, hey, in case you do get screwed, you couldn't get a good second quarterback for whatever reason, or one of your quarterbacks gets hurt, you know, you're not stuck with some schlep at a quarterback that's going to kill your fantasy team. You could throw a wide receiver in there. You could throw a running back in there. That being said, though, I do think it should be 4 points for a touchdown pass, not six. I don't think we want to overemphasize the quarterbacks all that much. But other than that, like Superflex leagues, I really hope, Mike, I truly hope they become more and more popular as it just adds more strategy to fantasy and it's more fun.
They are getting more popular, but I think your greater point is you would want them to become, to really explode and maybe take over format in the same way that PPR took over from standard leagues. I think George is looking for that. I have to agree. I'm a convert to this. I don't like straight 2QB leagues because it makes it a little bit more difficult when injuries occur. Superflex, at least you can cover yourself with a good flex player. But ultimately, it provides more strategy. Drafting into one quarterback leagues has become far too easy. Players after really that first tier get very jumbled together. So if you have the fifth ranked quarterback or the 12th ranked quarterback, there's not a ton of difference there. And it makes it really easy. George and I just got through with a Roto Experts mock standard draft. And he and I were both trying to make a point to wait as long as we could to draft quarterbacks. And then it got to the point of where it was ridiculous because Jake Seeley and other guys were doing the same thing. Jake Seeley, one of the top rankers in the fantasy industry. He writes for us as well as a senior writer at rotoexperts.com. He waited till the 13th round. He got Phil Rivers, and you and I went back-to-back with Russell Wilson and Kirk Cousins in the 10th round. These are guys that are ranked 5th, 6th, 7th in many instances. So you can wait and still get somebody in very late in draft. So your home leagues may not operate the same way. We're just telling you that's what we're seeing. George, one last thing on sleepers, because upcoming on Monday, it's going to be sleeper week on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're going to be talking about a lot of different sleepers that we have. But of this, I'm going to take it to the extreme here. On fantasypros.com, which is a really good place to go for aggregate rankings of experts' rankings. George, you're probably in there, Jake Seeley and many other people. Tier 5 of the quarterbacks is Alex Smith, Sam Bradford, Deshaun Watson. This is Alex Smith starts at 24. So in two quarterback leagues, ostensibly he would be the last one picked. Alex Smith, Sam Bradford, Deshaun Watson, Brian Hoyer, Trevor Siemian, Mike Glennon, Josh McCown. Of that group, who has the most upside?
All right, so Smith, Bradford, Watson,
Hoyer, Siemian, Glennon, McCown. If you want to make it Lynch instead of Siemian, that's okay.
Well, that's the problem, right? We don't know which one's going there, so I got to eliminate Siemian right there. Glennon, I want nothing to do with Chicago, and I certainly want nothing to do with the Jets. So we'll take them out there.
Couldn't Glennon throw the ball a million times, though? Like, couldn't he just throw so much that he makes himself valuable? Like Bortles?
He could. And he definitely could. You're right. Let's say you're right. We'll put a little circle around Glennon that maybe. Alex Smith, no, we know he's not going to throw the ball as much. Bradford doesn't throw the ball down the field either. And I think they'll try and run the ball a lot. Watson, we don't know when he's going to start. So really it would come down to me with two guys who I think have upside, really good for the reason you mentioned. Because they could throw the ball an awful lot because they'll be trailing Hoyer and Glennon. You know, I'm going to go with Hoyer here because, well, I know he's going to start all season. They don't have anybody else. You know, Glennon, It could just be a matter of time until Trubisky gets in there. Right? So I think that's my tiebreaker there. And I'll go with Hoyer over Trubisky. And I'll tell you one thing. I don't like Hoyer, by the way. I have him ranked 27th. Somebody I do like, though, I like Pierre Garçon a whole bunch in that offense, especially in PPR leagues. He's going to get a truckload of targets there because there's no one else.
Yeah, I mean, look, Jeremy Curley was a fantasy asset last year on a team that was even worse with You know, that was there at least. They've tried to sort of circle the wagons here. Jeremy Curley last year had 115 targets, caught 64 passes for 667 yards and three touchdowns. Not that impressive, but Jeremy Curley in a PPR league, he was sort of consistent week in, week out. Kaepernick was okay last year. His accuracy was okay. He took care of the ball pretty well. But I think they're going to be a little bit more of an organized offense, even if they're going to be bad this year.
Yeah, I would sort of agree with you. I think that's still a work in progress there. I think sometimes with Shanahan's offense, it also takes a year for a team truly is on here. I think we've seen that with even Matt Ryan and you know, better players there. So this is the definition of a team, a work in progress here. So it might be a couple of years where we really see what's going on here. And we all know that Hoyer is just a stopgap. I'm watching it. I think Hoyer was on NFL Live. I believe it was Monday, whatever day the franchise deadline was on. So he's on NFL Live on ESPN. He's there in studio, you know, with the analysts. And they're talking about the guy who might take his job next year in Kirk Cousins. And they're apologizing to him. It's like, this had to be the most uncomfortable thing ever for Kirk Cousins. He handled it for Hoyer. He handled it very well. But to hear guys keep speculating, you know, Adam Schefter speculating that next year San Fran will make a big play for Cousins.
So weird. I missed that.
It was hilarious. I mean, it was hilarious for me watching. Hoyer handled it very well, and he's probably used to this sort of thing anyway. But just to be talking about this, I mean, for a big part of the show, it was franchise deadline day. Cousins didn't sign the long-term deal. So I thought it was funny.
You know, so many people have been talking about the Cousins to San Francisco thing, and it almost makes me wonder if it almost makes me think it won't happen.
There are plenty of other teams he could go to.
That's what I'm saying. When too many people get on that same bandwagon of speculation, I'm like, this isn't going to work out. When too many people start speculating the same thing, it makes me worry that it just won't happen. Like somebody else will jump into the mix, or San Fran will just decide that they want to draft somebody because they're going to finish at the bottom of the league again. There's all these quarterback talents out there, and why not draft the younger guy and develop him as opposed to the guy who – I know he got along with Shanahan. I just think it's sort of.
But you think? I mean, you already said it, Mike. I mean, the Jets could be in line for a quarterback. Right? Cleveland could be in line for a quarterback. These are teams that'll pay. You know, there'll be money that's going to go around here. Who else there? Chicago, they drafted their guy. Minnesota could be in line for a quarterback, right? They might need somebody. There's news at the Saints that they may not re-sign Drew Brees, who's a free agent at the end of the year. So maybe the Saints will be in line for a quarterback, right? The Rams, if they get given up on Goff. Arizona, if Carson Palmer retires, he'll have other options than just San Fran. That's why Washington's being silly. He's going to get paid. It's not like it's Washington a bust for him. He'll have other options.
Arizona needs a long-term quarterback more than anybody, but New Orleans is right there. So you brought up two really good points. Look, we're going to close it out at here in the next segment. Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning, finishing off the show after the break. Back for the final segment of the Roto Experts on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Please go to iTunes Store or Google Play to download the app for free. Free to download, free to listen. So please do that. You can listen to us on demand live on every Saturday and Sunday morning from 8 to 10. George, I know the schedule has changed. I know you've been doing other shows, so tell people where they can hear you during the week.
All right, I'm on Monday nights, Fantasy First Look with Joe Galina and Chris Meany. I believe the first two episodes I was on with Joe Galina. And then this Monday, Chris Meany returns, but no Joe Galina. So it'll be Chris and I on Monday. And then on Tuesday nights, it's Joe Pisapia, Matt Modica, and I on the Fantasy Black Book, talking mainly football. Fantasy First Look, we talk about just about anything. As we talk about just about anything anywhere. Whatever you guys want to talk about is what we chat about. Then you and I are doing this show on weekends until week one of NFL Sunday, in which case I think you stay on, and I move I'll be on from 1 o'clock till, I think, pretty much covering all the games. I think we're calling it Fantasy Live, although I'm not 100% sure on that name yet. And we'll be there all day. I believe at 1 o'clock I'm working with Joe Galina and Chris Meany, then at 4 o'clock with Matt Modica, Tony Sincotta. I may have those who's working when reversed, but should be a fun day watching all the games, talking fantasy, trying to figure things out for everybody.
Yeah, so keep in mind, George and I will be here every Saturday morning from now through the end of the year.
End of time.
And probably beyond. We've been doing the show together for over a year. We'll continue to do it on Saturday mornings. Sunday mornings, we'll continue to do football season. We mix it up a little, but George and I will still be here every Saturday. Again, coming up this week, starting on Monday, we're doing like sleepers all week, sleeper week, basically on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. So please tune in. You'll hear mine and George and everybody else's sleepers. I'll reveal that. But George and I will be here again tomorrow as well, Sunday from 8 to 10. So please feel free to tune in. Now, George, we got some pitching matchups today for the baseball fans. Adam Wainwright, 11-5 on the season. Let's see if we can get a win against John Lester and the Cubs.
Wainwright has had an up and down season, right? 11-5 looks good, but, man, he's had some blow-ups in there. You know,
for sure.
So DFS-wise, I'm not touching him today. That's not happening. Yearly leagues, I probably am going to go with him. Don't really have much of a choice. Chris Bryant probably have a lineup again today as well. So I'll take my chances there, but not in DFS.
Yeah, no early games today. I mean, the
right, no 1 o'clock games, man.
Nah, none. Yeah, 4:05.
My wife just took my daughter out, so I'm half alone here. I have my youngest daughter with me, and I got no games to watch.
Yeah, you got to get some other stuff done around the house. So, Matt.
No.
I think back, George, and you and myself and Matt Modica talked about Matt Moore. Like, hey, this could be some really good value. He's 3-10.
So, not good value.
No, not at all. Sean, go ahead.
I'm a Matt Moore guy, you know, so I don't remember talking about him, but I'm sure I did because I do like Matt Moore, and I love the ballpark for pitchers. He's been disappointing, and there's some rumors now, the 49ers, the Giants might think about trading him at the deadline. I think they should probably do more and think about it. If you can get good value for him, you move him. He's a guy, Mike, has he's been teasing us ever since he came to the majors. Good stuff, left-handed, throws hard, never puts it all together.
Yeah. Obviously had the injury there as well, but you know, it's rough. So how about Masahiro Tanaka throws today? I got to put him in my starting lineup, I think, but it's against a good hitting unit, so maybe not.
He's been pitching better of late, pitched good against Boston, but he did that early in the year when he was terrible too. I think I got to wait one more game, Mike. I don't think I can do it. It is safe for a good pitcher's ballpark, but you mentioned the Mariners can hit. They've been held down the first two games of the series. I really want to, Mike. I really do. But I can't pull that trick. I need one more good start from him.
I'm desperate for wins. I think I got to play a little bit fast and loose here.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. So he's in my lineup. And I know he could get pounded on the road in Seattle. Late. I'll be crying in my beer at midnight. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back tomorrow on the Roto Experts in the Morning. I'm up next with Rich Sherman on College Football Today.